And also, there are a lot of things that I have learned over the course of this experience that will be useful in whichever pipeline I'm fighting next.
Well, we want to thank you very much, and keep it up.
I will. Thank you.
That was Susan Baxter, property owner up there in the town of Sandusfield, fighting the Kinder Morgan / Tennessee Gas pipeline spur that's going through the Otis State Forest right near her property. And I want to let you know that we are now being joined by Martha Klein, who is communications director for the Connecticut chapter of the Sierra Club. Martha, thank you so much for being part of the action tonight.
It's a pleasure, Richard.
Great to have you. So I'm not sure if you caught any of that conversation that I was having there with Susan Baxter.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, and you actually were, I think, on the scene up there a bit yourself, were you not?
Yeah, I sure was. On Saturday, there was a wonderful rally there on Susan's property and adjacent to it that was hosted by Sugar Shack Alliance. And during our rally and march, some members of the Sugar Shack Alliance had gone in and shut that down, the construction site, for an hour or so. So it was a very interesting scene and also a very, very heartbreaking scene.
Were there arrests on the weekend?
Yeah. Yes, there were. Like I said, there were sort of two different things going on. We were having our legal protest and rally over at Spectacle Pond, and then members of Sugar Shack had gone in and had occupied five different staging areas of the construction site, and then those folks were arrested. Yeah.
I see. Well, it's really great to connect the dots here with you, who have been on both sides of the state line, fighting and researching this pipeline situation.
Yeah.
Connecticut chapter of the Sierra Club is something that people may not even be aware of. Mm-hmm. People all know the Sierra Club. I'm sure listeners do, and people in my community do. But what has been your posture and position regarding fracked natural gas pipelines in Connecticut in the past few years?
The Connecticut Chapter Sierra Club has been opposed to all of the fracked gas infrastructure expansion. So I'm talking about the use of more natural gas in the state, the construction of both interstate and intrastate gas pipelines, and the gas-powered plants. We're opposed to all of it. The number one organizational priority of the National Sierra Club is to prevent climate change or mitigate the worst effects of it. So that means we can't continue to expand the use of this dirty fossil fuel in Connecticut, and yet that's exactly what's been happening. They've been using much more of it over the last couple of years, and so we've been fighting all of those. The pipeline is just one of the three that we're fighting, the one that Susan's talking about, the Kinder Morgan. There's also the Enbridge-owned Algonquin pipeline expansion. They're on the second of three proposed expansions to that line. So we've been fighting those, and then there's also the within-the-state gas expansion, which includes building hundreds of miles of new gas pipeline to connect the 40,000 or 50,000 new customers. And then there's the 3 to 4 gas-powered plants that the Connecticut chapter is fighting. Happily, one of the gas power plants in Killingly was denied its permit by Connecticut Siting Council, but they're actually appealing.
I see. I've been part of a network of activists on the shoreline. I recently moved to Brantford, Connecticut. And there, a lot of people up in Brantford have been wondering. We actually been thinking about trying to educate our own group and the town about the pipeline network in Connecticut and the natural gas construction that you're referring to. Can you give us a sense of the density of natural gas pipeline, the network of pipelines that actually already exist, and how these expansions that you've referred to may actually increase that network?
So there are three major gas pipelines that already exist in Connecticut: the Iroquois, the Algonquin, and the Kinder Morgan. And those first two pipelines that I mentioned are not owned by Native American tribes. With the expansion on the Kinder Morgan and on the Algonquin line, the Iroquois line is not looking at an expansion, at least not at this moment. What you're mainly seeing is an enormous increase in the amount of methane methane, which is what natural gas is, of course, being moved into and across our state. But weirdly, what we're not seeing so much of are new customers who are wanting to use methane or natural gas for use in their home. So there have only been about, 40,000 people who converted to it in the state of Connecticut, and that's even with the subsidies. So what we're not seeing is a huge number of new customers for it. But what we're seeing, and what goes along with that expanded pipeline and the increased amount of methane coming into and across our state, are increased compressor stations that releases more emissions that cause people who live around them to have potentially health impacts. You're seeing increased power on the metering and regulating stations. You're seeing more, potentially more emissions coming out of the pigging or the cleaning stations. So what you're seeing is a big increase in the amount of greenhouse gas emissions in our state, specifically of methane, which is a potent greenhouse gas. As well as seeing an enlargement of the infrastructure that has impacts not only on climate health, but on human health and also on tree health.
Approximately how many miles of pipeline exist in Connecticut now?
Okay, hundreds and hundreds. So just the one, the Algonquin alone is 320 miles across Connecticut. The Kinder Morgan is something less than that. When they're expanding the Algonquin pipeline, like I said, they're doing, they want to do three expansions. They're on the second one. They're expanding it across most of the 320 miles. In the Kinder Morgan case, they're only expanding the 8 miles in Connecticut, 4 miles in Mass, and about 3 in New York, because they're building these expanded pipelines to a great extent to store the gas, because they don't really have enough customers in Connecticut where the expansion terminates to buy all the gas. So there's, hundreds and hundreds of miles of our state are already covered by pipeline. I just keep coming back to the same point, without there being an increased demand for methane. So these pipeline expansions are being built right now without there being a demand. There is not a huge increase in customers.
Talk a little bit about the campaign to increase natural gas consumption in Connecticut. I guess it started under Governor Malloy, and this sort of philosophy that is very much promoted in our state, that natural gas is the answer to our greenhouse problems, greenhouse emissions problems, as a bridge fuel. How did this push for natural gas conversion come about, and where does it stand?
So what happened was in 2013, the state of Connecticut passed the first comprehensive energy strategy, or actually deep released the first comprehensive energy strategy, which called for a conversion of hundreds of thousands of customers in the state of Connecticut to the use of fracked methane for home heating and cooking, and that would happen with ratepayer subsidies that was put on all of us. And by the way, that's still on our bill. That happened through grants that happened from the Green Bank. So all electricity customers in Connecticut have been subsidizing these conversions, and it was later legislated. So our state general assembly creates laws out of the CES, the Comprehensive Energy Strategy. And so they wanted to convert hundreds of thousands of customers to gas, and that would be turning them over only to Eversource and UI, who are the two exclusive electricity distributors in our state. They wanted to build 900 miles of brand new pipeline to connect all those customers. That was done without any environmental impact statements or public hearings of any kind. But that project really failed, and so they only were able to convert out of the original goal of 280,000 since 2013. They've now converted somewhere in the order of 50,000 customers. So that plan has been a whole-scale failure. So where that plan stands now is that in the current Comprehensive Energy Strategy, the second one that was just released last week, it doesn't call for continued ratepayer subsidized conversions of individual customers to gas. No, instead, it remains completely wrong-headed about gas, but instead what they're trying to do is using this Orwellian language about how there are natural gas pipeline constraints during high demand periods, particularly winter months. This creates grid reliability concerns and price volatility. Those things are actually not accurate. So the new CES contains language that I would say is demonstrably false. about what's going on with the use of what increasing the use of methane has done to our state in terms of making electricity prices go higher, making us more dependent on methane. But it certainly has not caused the power to go out because they hadn't built the brand new pipelines. I mean, energy policy is kind of opaque, and we don't have a lot of time to talk about it, but it was really a business issue that caused the price of natural gas to be high in the cold winter of 2013-2014, and as a result, our grid administrator, ISO New England, Independent System Operator of New England, changed the way that power companies can buy natural gas. Rather than making them buy it on the spot market, they can secure contracts in advance. As a result, the next winter, 2014-2015, which was 1 degree colder than 13-14, all of New England paid half as much in our total energy costs without having started to build a single inch of brand new frack gas pipeline. So what the state DEEP is calling for is continuing the methane increase, but not doing it so much by individual customers, but instead calling for these build-outs of these massive interstate pipelines, which, of course, Connecticut is the only state in the United States of America that has the pipeline tax. So we're the only customers that will be paying for brand-new, privately-owned gas pipeline.
Can you educate me and the listeners about the comprehensive energy strategy? That's a little bit of a head spinner. So what is it, and how does it control our overall energy allocations? And does it direct us toward 100% renewable energy in Connecticut anytime in the near or distant future?
Yeah, so it's a regulatory document. So the Department of Energy releases this. And then what happens, like what happened with the first one in 2013, is then the legislature, the Connecticut General Assembly, will pass laws that are in keeping with the spirit of this document. So it itself is not the legislation, but it tends to, you know, dictate or at minimum suggest the way things go. But it's pretty powerful because this was largely created by, you know, it was Governor Malloy's mandate that these documents be made, these energy strategies be written theoretically every 3 years. This one took about 4 years to come out. But the thing is that it's really very political. It's really not truthfully just a sort of neutral energy document about if we went to 100% renewables this quickly, it would save us this much money, and we could, you know, prevent this much greenhouse gas. It's totally political. So what it's trying to do is it has language where it says, to meet our 2050 greenhouse gas emission target, transformation of energy flows is necessary. And then, like a few paragraphs later, it will say the demand for natural gas is rising, yet gas pipelines are constrained. They said that, you know, over and over again. That's really a political message that's coming from Eversource, which, by the way, is not only an electrical distributor, it's a gas distributor and owner of gas pipeline. But Eversource had the ear, I would say, of our government to some extent, without being overly jaded. So it's really about getting the electric power companies to get what they want, and what they want is to build increased interstate pipelines so that eventually the enlarged pipelines can be built to Mass and then up there to Maine, to the coast, where they can get to Canada and be exported for, you know, at huge profits. So what this is really what it's about, and here's my total jaded perspective, it's about making ratepayers pay for gas pipelines that will then all the profit will go to the energy companies.
We're speaking with Martha Klein, who is communications director for the Connecticut chapter of the Sierra Club, and we're, as I said earlier, connecting the dots between a pipeline spur that is being created as we speak in the Otis State Forest in Sandusfield, Massachusetts, and correct me if I'm wrong, but will that same pipeline continue into Connecticut, into
Northwestern? The expansion, I mean, Kinder Morgan, like we talked about earlier, it's already there. It's been there for about 50 years. But this expansion is in New York, Mass, and Connecticut. There are 8 miles of it. It goes from Suffield right at the Mass-Connecticut border, and then traverses 8 miles down through beautiful bucolic farm country into East Granby. And the only two customers who want to buy the gas that is coming from that pipeline are, drum roll, UI and Eversource.
So do we have an estimate on what the cost to Connecticut taxpayers will be from that that piece of the pipeline?
We are not paying for that one yet. So there's one way that Connecticut electricity ratepayers have already been paying for gas expansion, and that's the intrastate gas conversions. We've been subsidizing those since 2014. The gas pipeline tax that our legislature passed in 2015, that calls for us to start paying for interstate gas pipeline tax pipeline construction after this year. So we are not outright subsidizing this Kinder Morgan expansion right now. But let me just say that if you read any of the 227 pages of the new CES, what you see a lot is that electric distribution companies who are getting into, you know, gas distribution, who are getting into pipeline ownership, are looking for ways to recoup the costs, not just of being in business from their customers, but ways to recoup the cost of construction from the customers. So that is completely an inherent part of this plan, and it's over and over again repeated in the CES. Costs will, you know, are an issue for the, you know, gas pipeline companies, that which is a code for saying we got to pay.
Well, can you just, as we come down the home stretch here, Martha Klein, can you just generally give us your assessment of Connecticut's plan, an allocation of resources to move toward the goal of 100% renewables, which I believe Sierra Club thinks is possible, even in Connecticut, and or even to move toward 30% renewable, which I believe is the that's policy now in Connecticut to have 30% renewable by the year 2030.
Right. It's a policy and it could become the law. It's not enough, and it actually slows down the track that we were on. So our former RPS got us theoretically to 20% use of renewable power by 2020. This current draft actually slows our RPS down, our renewable portfolio standard down, to 30% by 2030. If we stayed on the, you know, the trajectory we're on, we should be faster. Now, the Sierra Club thinks we need to be at 50% by 2030 and 100% by 2050. The sea levels are already rising. The extreme storms are already using, you know, we've already paid $1 billion in the state of Connecticut for extreme weather. We need to make this transition now. And all this CES does, frankly, is it really slows us down and makes the process more difficult for us to get to where we know we can get to. And we use, you know, you can look at the Solutions Project. There's varying scientists around the country who've done the numbers. The Sierra Club just launched the Ready for 100 project, a national project to get cities and towns to go to 100%. We know that this can be done. It needs to happen quickly. But we don't believe that this CES gets us there. It furthermore doesn't get us to where we need to be as far as reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. So what I want to say is this, the Connecticut chapter is going to continue to be super strong in fighting for clean energy and getting fossil fuels out of the way. And I want everyone to come to the public meetings that are, you know, going to be happening. And the, there's one in your area, August 16th. There's a meeting at 6:30 on Housatonic Community College, 900 Lafayette Boulevard in Bridgeport, Connecticut. And that's an opportunity for people in your city to come and say, hey, Connecticut Deep, this plan is lousy, and it definitely doesn't get us where we need to be, and it doesn't get us there fast enough. Quit emphasizing fossil fuels and get out of the way of renewable power.
Thanks for pointing out that public meeting. There are other public meetings, as I think I've noted here. Let's see, August 14th at Webb Hall at the Eastern Connecticut State University in Willimantic. There is one at Fort Trumbull State Park in New London on August 21st, at City Hall in Torrington on August 29th, and at Deep Headquarters in Hartford on September 6th, and at the Connecticut Agricultural Experiment Station in New Haven on September 7th. Are these public meetings listed on the Sierra Club Connecticut website?
I don't think they're up there because our office manager was out sick yesterday and today, but they're on our Facebook page, and as of tomorrow morning, they will absolutely be on our website.
Great. So let's just, why don't you just mention that website?
Sure. It's sierraclub.org/Connecticut. And we'll be putting these meetings up on the homepage, and we will be there submitting comments and asking for us to get to 100% renewable energy very quickly.
Well, this has been a whirlwind tour of the pipeline, the frack gas pipeline situation in Connecticut, and there's so much more to talk about. Let's do it again soon, Martha. We really appreciate your being here tonight.
Thank you so much, Richard. I really appreciate it, and I love WPKN.
we love your love.
Okay, thanks, Richard.
Okay, bye-bye. Thanks.
Good night.
Okay, and let me just do my due diligence here with the phone. Hello? Go away. There we go. All right, and let's go to some music, and we will be back in about 10 minutes with our next guest, final guest, Shelley Altman, who is the chair of the New Haven chapter of Jewish Voices for Peace. And we're going to be talking about legislation, Senate Bill 720, that appears to criminalize participation by corporations and individuals in economic boycotts of Israel or of any goods produced in the settlements that are in the occupied territories around Israel. So we'll be back in a minute. Let's hear some music now from Just Who, Stan Getz, and Elvin Jones and others. Check it out.